Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with the one and only Frankie Valli. Can't believe it. He's coming to the Hippodrome in Baltimore on April 6th, and then two nights at Warner Theater, April 7th and April 8th. Mr. Valli, this is an absolute honor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for calling.
Now, I am a huge fan. I'm sure all of our listeners will be too. If we've never come and seen a show of yours, especially in recent years, what can we expect out at these shows at Hippodrome and Warner Theater? Is it all the old hits?
You're going to have to come to find out.
So cryptic. Awesome. But I mean, you've had so many hits over the years. Do you find that it's people of all ages? Because I mean, I'm in my 30s and I'm obsessed with your music. I feel like you probably have so many generations come out to see it, these things.
Well, I think that it's been terrific that that we have been able to bridge generations. And I'm sure that Jersey Boys has had an awful lot to do with it. With people going in to see Jersey Boys and finding out that they didn't realize we had as many hits as we did. We enjoy doing what we do.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it that show definitely got a whole new, you know, multiple new generations into your music. So if we've seen that show, you know, we know your sort of your young adulthood very well, how you guys formed the band and everything. But take me back before that, like as a kid in Newark, New Jersey, how did you first get into music and, you know, what did you grow up listening to?
Well, I guess I was a dreamer. One of those kind of kids that used to imagine becoming successful. And I always liked to sing as a kid, and I did a lot of street corner singing, and came from a relatively poor environment. And dreams is the thing that got a lot of us through in those days.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. How did you develop that signature falsetto? Was there a certain, you know, age where that clicked and you said, hey, this is my meal ticket?
I don't really know when I developed it, but, you know, because I had never really taken any professional lessons, I just thought everybody could do what I could do. You know, it's like talking. That's what I thought.
You could just do it. You're just born with it. That's so awesome. Does that, all these years later, I mean, you're about to turn like 83 almost in next month, right? Or May.
No, 38.
Oh, sorry. I had the numbers transposed.
Right.
Oh, that's great. But I mean, doing the falsetto over all those years, I mean, it's got to put a strain on your voice. How do you still do it? You're superhuman.
Well, I don't know. You know, I guess you know, if you're born with blue eyes or brown eyes or green eyes, they stay the same color right to the end. you know, you may lose a note or two one way or another, but you make up for it in different ways.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like the color of someone's eyes. You were just born to do it. That's so great. Take our listeners, if let's say they haven't seen that show and are unaware sort of the beginning with the four lovers and everything, explain to them how you met Tommy DeVito, Bob Gaudio, and Nick Massey and formed the four lovers in those early days, before you were the Four Seasons.
This is a very long explanation. I mean we're going back some 50 years or so.
Yeah.
We basically, Tommy DeVito and I were from the same neighborhood. And he was with a trio called the Variety Trio. And they'd work local clubs, and I'd go in the club, and they'd call me up to sing. And at one point, he offered me a job. With the trio, and we went on, and we became the four lovers, and we had some regional success. We did the Ed Sullivan Show three times, and then somewhere along the way, we were out promoting a record, and Bob Gaudio was working with the group that he was working with. It was called the Royal Teens. They had a hit out called Short Shorts at the time.
Man, who wears short shorts? Yeah,
and that was the first that, you know, when we did this television show together, promoting each of us promoting our own record. That's when I met Bob, and I found out that he was from New Jersey. And met him later, he was writing songs, and he played me some songs, and I liked the songs I was writing, and I told Tommy DeVito that I thought he'd be great in the group, and Tommy was against it, so I made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Nice. And Bob did join the band, and then a few years later, I had known Bob Crew, who ended up producing our records, for years before that when I was doing some solo stuff, and he produced some things with me. And then we met Bob Crew, and Bob Crew and Bob Gaudio got together. They were writing songs. We were making records that Bob Crew was producing and backing up various artists that he had. And then came Sherry.
And the rest
I think everybody knows.
The rest is history.
But that's the short version.
No, thank you. That was a pretty good abridged version. I'm impressed. is it true, like in the show, when you guys changed from Four Lovers to Four Seasons, what, you saw the name Four Seasons on a sign?
Yes. Well, actually, we were not having any success yet. We were just in the studio recording and all that. And we auditioned for a club that was also a bowling alley, and it was called the Four Seasons. And we didn't get the job, and on the way out, I looked up at the time, boy, I said, what a great name for a group. And then, it just went away, and then finally we decided when we recorded Sherry that we were going to change the name to the Four Seasons.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad it was Four Seasons is catchy. Right. It could have been another bowling alley. It could have been like the the Duck Pins or something. That's much better. That's awesome. You mentioned Sherry. Take me into when you guys were recording that, and then, you know, you hear it for the first time on the radio, and that sucker just takes off. How did that change your life?
Well, it wasn't that easy. I mean, I heard we went in and recorded it. We felt we had something. We finally did get it released, and it wasn't an instant hit. It took about, I guess 6 or 8 weeks before we could get any major radio play.
Wow.
And once it did get it, it just shot right through and became a number one record.
Absolutely. Is that one of your favorite ones to sing, even to this day?
They're all favorites. They're like your children, you know?
Speaking of children, Big Girls, Don't Cry, came up next. Sherry, you said, took a little while to catch fire, but once it did, you know, you guys were a known household name at that point. You start cranking them out now. So take me into how did you guys came up with Big Girls, Don't Cry. Was that a Gaudio song?
Yes, it was. I can't take you into some of these things because I was not doing any of the writing, so Crew and Gaudio right. were writing. The three in a row that we had that were number ones were Sherry, Big Girls Don't Cry, and Walk Like a Man.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you guys?
We
came
were just doing songs because we liked them. I had nothing to do with the writing.
Right. Well, do you remember when you guys came up with the Walk Like a Man little dance, the little strut there? Do you remember how you guys came up with that?
I really don't.
That's okay. December 1963. Oh, what a night. Do you remember the first time you sang that and when you heard that explode?
Well, I remember the first time I sang it, but I remember when we recorded it. It originally was about prohibition. And
really?
When I read the lyric, I went to my partner, Bob, and said, this lyric, I said, nobody's going to understand it. Kids are not going to understand about prohibition. And we almost took it off the... off the list of songs that we were going to do because there was some discussion on the lyrics. And Bob went home that night and rewrote the lyric, and the lyric was, Oh, What a Night, December 63. And that was a hit.
Yeah. When back in Prohibition, it would have been late December, like in 23 or something.
Right.
I'm glad you guys changed it. You have all these hits with the group, the four guys, but how big of a challenge was it to spin off solo then? Because I know Can't Take My Eyes Off You, no one thought it would work with the brass band and all that, but you stuck to your guns and insisted to do it. And God, that's probably your signature song now. But explain like sort of the early challenges of doing that, and then finally when people were like, okay, this clicked.
Well, there were really no challenges. It was something that we had always planned that we were going to do. I mean, there was no challenge. It was the kind of music that that I originally was interested in doing. I was never, and the offset in the of the beginning of when we started recording, I didn't really want to do pop music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was more into jazz and songs like My Eyes Adored You were more big band oriented, and
right,
and Can't Take My Eyes Off You and Swearing to God. So, you know, there was nothing challenging. It's just something that I wanted to do.
That's awesome. That song has just taken on a life of its own, like even in movies and stuff. I know Heath Ledger sang it in a movie, and the one I remember is De Niro and Christopher Walken and all them singing it in The Deer Hunter at the pool hall. Do you remember and see that in the theater and say, "Hey, that's my song"?
Oh no, we were really thrilled when that happened.
So you remember the scene I'm talking about? They're hitting the pool sticks?
Yes, I do.
Oh, it was great. But I wanted to pivot into movies because you, of course, did the title theme for Grease, written by Barry Gibb.
Barry Gibb called me and told me he wrote a song he thought was right for me. It was going to be the title song to a movie. He sent it to my house. I listened to it. I loved it. We went in and we recorded it. That was it.
It's so odd. It just
I'm sure if he knew that it was going to be as big a hit as it was, he probably would have kept it for the Bee Gees.
Yeah, exactly. He would have put it in Saturday Night Fever. Instead, you got the other Travolta movie. Oh, that's great. Did you ever catch up with Travolta or Olivia Newton on that one? And did they ever thank you for making their movie huge?
No, but I've run into both of them at different occasions, and you know. And it's great. I just worked with Olivia about 4 or 5 months ago.
Oh, what was that on?
No, we just did a date together.
Oh, nice. Oh, you did a tour. That's awesome. That's so awesome. Awesome. Cool. Well, speaking of musicals like Grease, obviously coming full circle back to Jersey Boys, you know, when you first saw John Lloyd Young, you know, portraying you on stage, that must have been totally bizarre, but B, you know, what'd you think of the show itself, cementing not only your music was already famous, but now your life's famous. It cemented your legacy for all time now.
I thought it was terrific, except, you know, I thought it was strange watching somebody play me. You know, it was a little bizarre. But I got used to it very quickly.
Did he ever, you know, powwow with you for his research preparing for the role, or was when you saw it was a complete surprise?
I was there when they auditioned John Lloyd Young. So.
Oh, gotcha. So you helped influence that a little bit. That's awesome.
Right.
No, but I mean, it is one of the biggest Broadway shows ever. I've seen it several times, and I love it. It's one of those that even if you don't like musicals, that you're gonna love it. It's such a great show, and that music's just gonna live on forever. What about the movie version? Did you ever get a chance? I'm sure you met with Clint Eastwood when he was making that.
Clint Eastwood is a sensational director, but there are a lot of things about the movie I did not agree on. You know,
are you allowed to say which ones, or you'd rather not?
No, I just, you know, it's past. I'm not looking to dance on anybody.
Sure, sure, sure. The movie's a little darker than the musical. I could see where you're coming with that. But yeah, Clint's an amazing filmmaker. And by the way, speaking of which, a lot of people that might not know that if they haven't seen the show, that you guys knew Joe Pesci way back when, too. He was there back with the forming of the band. Explain that to our listeners.
Well, it's been explained 1,000 times. Joe Pesci is another guy that lived in the same neighborhood. That's where we knew him from.
So what was he like back then, before he became the
he
one?
He was pretty much the same. I mean, you know, becoming successful as an actor didn't really change him as a person.
Oh, I like when you hear that, because sometimes it does change people, so that's great. Awesome. Well, bringing it full circle then, you know, we're coming back around to the Hippodrome and on April 6th, Warner Theater, April 7th and 8th. I'm sure you'll be singing all the songs we mentioned and even some of the ones we didn't.
We're going to have a lot of fun. I just hope everybody comes out and I'm sure they'll have as much fun as we do.
Awesome. Thank you. You're so more than generous with your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay.
Frankie Valli. Thanks again.
All righty. Bye-bye.